91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids and 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji and 89.9 in Brainerd. News is next. It's 6 o'clock.
Good morning. Another Democratic primary in a Midwest state ends with the thinnest of margins in a test of progressive power. This time in Wisconsin's governor's race, the more moderate candidate won. It's Morning Edition from NPR News. Hundreds of U.S. sailors and their families were evacuated from Bahrain at the start of the war with Iran. I'm Leila Faldin.
And I'm Michelle Martin. Months later, they're still waiting for the Navy to figure out a final plan for them. Also, what kind of financial questions is AI good at answering? And comedian Jeff Arcuri talks about working the crowd in his latest special. It is Wednesday, August 12th. On this day in 1990, fossil collector Sue Hendrickson found one of the best preserved T-Rex skeletons. It went on display in Chicago as a dino named Sue. News is next.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Windsor Johnston. President Trump took a secret flight out of Turkey last month after Israel warned the U.S. of an Iranian threat of attack. NPR's Daniel Estrin reports that's according to a person familiar with the matter.
Israel had intelligence of a possible threat of Iranian missiles toward Air Force One and shared that intelligence with the U.S., according to a person briefed on the matter, not authorized to speak publicly. The warning prompted Trump to be secretly flown out of Turkey on a different plane. Air Force One flew separately. That news was first reported by the Washington Post. When asked about it late Tuesday, Trump said he was following instructions from the Secret Service. This comes amid rising tensions between the U.S. and Iran, with no progress toward reopening the Strait of Hormuz. Daniel Estrin, NPR News. Tel Aviv.
South Carolina Senator Darlene Graham and Congressman Ralph Norman are advancing to a Republican special primary runoff election later this month. South Carolina Public Radio's Gavin Jackson reports the two candidates are competing for the seat left vacant by the late Senator Lindsey Graham.
A month after Senator Lindsey Graham died from a heart condition, voters are one step closer to having a nominee to replace him on the November ballot. His sister Darlene, who was appointed by the governor and urged to run for a full term by President Trump, and 5th District Congressman Ralph Norman, who lost a gubernatorial primary in June. Graham is focusing on more kitchen table issues in contrast to her late brother, while Norman, a member of the House Freedom Caucus, is concerned about the national debt and spending. Congressman Russell Fry and former Congressman and Governor Mark Sanford did not secure enough votes to advance to the August 25th runoff, despite both being well known in South Carolina politics. For NPR News, I'm Gavin Jackson in Columbia, South Carolina.
Many public health experts are worried that President Trump's call to change childhood vaccinations will unnecessarily confuse and frighten parents. NPR's Rob Stein has more.
President Trump wants to cut the number of vaccinations children get and space out the shots they do receive. Anti-vaccine activists are welcoming Trump's executive order calling for that, but most medical experts are denouncing it. And while the president's order won't change anything right away, Dr. Aaron Millstone from the American Academy of Pediatrics says it can still be harmful.
The most tangible thing that will come out of the announcement is confusion, and confusion amongst parents are going to lead to delaying vaccination,
leading to fewer kids getting vaccinated and more kids getting sick from infections like measles and whooping cough. Rob Stein, NPR News.
Stocks across Asia close mixed today. On Wall Street, Dow futures are up 37 points at this hour. You're listening to NPR News from Washington. Tech giant Meta is going on trial in California today over claims that Facebook and Instagram harm young users. The lawsuit was brought by 29 state attorneys general. The states accuse Meta of designing its platforms to keep children hooked while misleading the public about their safety. Meta denies wrongdoing and says it has taken steps to protect young users. North Korea launched a ballistic missile into the sea, its second launch in a week. NPR's Anthony Kuhn reports the drill comes ahead of the annual U.S. and South Korean joint military exercises.
The suspected short-range ballistic missile was fired from around the east coast city of Wonsan and flew some 430 miles to the east. It was the North's 11th known missile launch this year and was detected by both South Korean and Japanese authorities. North Korea routinely fires missiles in protest against U.S. and South Korean military drills, despite the Allies' claims that the drills are purely defensive. Yesterday, North Korean media criticized Japan's annual defense policy paper, calling it an attempt to justify Japan's military buildup. Tokyo's metropolitan government, meanwhile, cited the threat of North Korean missiles in announcing the construction of an underground missile shelter near the capital's main train station. Anthony Kuhn, NPR News, Seoul.
Rescue crews in western Colombia are searching for survivors after a powerful earthquake. At least 180 people have been killed since the magnitude 6.8 quake struck on Monday. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Eric and Wendy Schmidt through the Schmidt Family Foundation, working toward a healthy, resilient, secure world for all. On the web at theschmidt.org. This is NPR.
Hey, it's Steve Inskeep with NPR's Morning Edition. 50 years ago, KAXE became the first rural public radio station in the nation, serving northern Minnesota. 50 years ago, the first rural public radio station in the United States. Great public radio starts with a mission to serve the community. From Morning Edition to All Things Considered to the local news and the Up North Report, KAXE keeps you informed. The goal is to strengthen civic health in rural northern Minnesota. Let's think about that, civic health, by making local government and elections more understandable and accessible and transparent before, during, and after the vote. So congratulations on 50 years to KAXE.
Your membership has gotten us here to 50 years of KEXE. Do your part. Text the word donate to 218-326-1234.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin.
And I'm Leila Faudel. Good morning. Results from another round of primary races are in, and those results are mixed.
And that's making it somewhat difficult to gauge what voters want and don't want in the upcoming midterm elections.
We've got Minnesota Public Radio's Clay Masters on the line with us for more on the results. Hi, Clay.
Hi there.
Okay, let's start with a closely watched race in your neighboring state of Wisconsin that was home to a competitive Democratic primary for governor. What do we know?
Yeah, Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley, who is considered a more moderate candidate, narrowly beat out a state representative, Francesca Hong, who identifies as a Democratic Socialist. That's according to an AP race call. This race was closely watched, of course, to see if it would replicate the results of another swing state, nearby Michigan, where progressive Abdul El-Sayed recently won the Democratic primary for U.S. Senate there. While that didn't happen, this was a very close race and shows that there's a good amount of Democratic voters who are looking for a significant change in their party. He'll face GOP Congressman Tom Tiffany, a Trump-backed Republican in this swing state.
In a Senate primary in Minnesota, where you are, Democrats backed the more progressive candidate. Tell us more about that race.
Yeah, that's the state's Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan. She won. The race between her and Congresswoman Angie Craig was really centered around President Trump's immigration crackdown this past winter here. That's what you heard a lot from in the ads. There was, you know, more than 3,000 federal agents that aimed at deporting undocumented immigrants that came to the state last winter, ultimately led to the fatal shootings of Renee Good and Alex Preddy. Flanagan regularly, really, went after Craig during the primary for a vote she made in Congress backing a GOP-backed immigration bill. Craig said she regretted that vote, and last night, Flanagan had this to say.
I know that we can fix our broken immigration system, secure the border, and create a real pathway to citizenship that aligns with our values.
And noteworthy, Leila Flanagan would be the first Native American woman to serve in the U.S. Senate should she win.
And who will she be facing on the Republican side of this open U.S. Senate seat?
Republican Michelle Tafoya, a former sportscaster who is not closely aligned with President Trump. Here's what she told me last night.
I am running to call balls and strikes to say, I think the president is right on this one. I think the president is wrong on this one. And I have the spine to stand up and say those things.
And being able to say as a Republican you are willing to disagree with the president is important when it comes to a place like Minnesota, because the state has not gone for Trump in the last three presidential elections.
What about the candidates that President Trump did back last night in competitive primaries? How did they do?
Here in Minnesota, Trump backed MyPillow founder Mike Lindell, and he lost the state GOP primary for governor to the state's Speaker of the House, Lisa Damith. She was largely seen as the establishment favorite with more money, despite not getting Trump's backing or even the endorsement of the state's Republican Party. Damith will face Democratic Senator Amy Klobuchar in the governor's race. Klobuchar quickly got in after current Governor Tim Walz decided not to seek a third term. And also, I just should note, in South Carolina, Senator Darlene Graham, who is serving out the remainder of her brother Lindsey Graham's term, did not secure enough votes to win Tuesday's primary outright. She was also endorsed by President Trump, and she's going to advance to a runoff later this month against Representative Ralph Norman.
Clay Masters of Minnesota Public Radio. Thank you, Clay.
My pleasure.
We're going to talk about these primary results in more depth now with Kyle Condick. He is the managing editor of Sabato's Crystal Ball. That's a newsletter published by the University of Virginia Center for Politics. Kyle Condick, good morning.
Good morning.
So let's start in Wisconsin, where the Democratic primary for governor was tight. The state representative, Francesca Hong, had been the polling favorite. She didn't prevail. And this made me think about that Democratic Senate primary in Michigan, where the margin for the eventual winner was smaller than projected. So what happened here in Wisconsin? Was the polling just off again, or did something else shift the dynamics of the race?
I think the polling probably was off to a certain degree with the sort of progressive candidate being overstated, but this was also a crazy topsy-turvy race. And, you know, polls, we describe them as a quote-unquote snapshot in time. Well, the snapshot in time, you know, things kept changing, and there was a clear consolidation behind David Crowley, the person who won the nomination overnight. And also, I think Francesca Hong she was a weak candidate who had a weak finish to the campaign. There was a lot of focus on some of the, frankly, kind of crazy things she'd said over the years, you know, talking about canceling Thanksgiving, and she tried to do some cleanup on that, but wasn't particularly good at doing that. And so I just think a lot of Wisconsin Democrats who are concerned about electability swung toward Crowley, and you know, that was the candidate endorsed by the sitting governor, Tony Evers, who comes out of this looking pretty good.
And now your group is now what, calling this lean Democrat, or how are you calling how are you looking at the general?
Yeah, so we had had the Wisconsin governor's race rated as toss-up, but there have been a lot of elections and developments in Wisconsin since Trump got elected again that have been really pretty good for Democrats and bad for Republicans, and it's a Democratic-leaning year. We figured that so long as the Democrats produced a credible a gubernatorial nominee, they should be favored. So we actually moved the race from toss-up to leans Democratic overnight because Hong lost, basically.
So a moderate victory in Wisconsin, a progressive one in Michigan last week, and also in Minnesota last night, where, as we just heard, Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan won the primary for U.S. Senate, where she beat Congresswoman Angie Craig. Do you draw any conclusions overall when you're looking at these results in the Midwest?
I think there is probably a battle for the party going on ideologically right now, but it's not one that necessarily you could say that either side is winning. I think the quote unquote establishment in the Democratic Party is weaker than it's been in recent years, certainly. But the fact that Crowley was able to win in Wisconsin and what is really such an important race shows that I think the establishment and these sort of electability concerns do still have some juice on the Democratic side.
I'm thinking about the Republican side now, where, you know, President Trump endorsed Mike Lindell, the MyPillow founder, in the Republican primary for governor of Minnesota. He lost. Trump backed Senator Darlene Graham in the special South Carolina primary to fill her late brother's seat. She was the top vote getter, but she still has to go to a runoff because the margin was too thin. Just looking at those data points, not many, but those are two data points. Does it say something to you about the state of Trump's influence in the party right now?
Certainly Republicans are still going to feel like they want to have Trump's endorsement if they can get it. But he has taken some losses in some of these endorsement races recently. And we're going to have this runoff in the South Carolina Senate race in a couple of weeks. You know, Graham did finish in first, but she's, you know, 33%. You needed 50% to advance without a runoff. So we'll have to see how that goes. But particularly in some governor's races, again, as we saw in Minnesota last night, you know, the president is not necessarily getting what he wants. And that was, you know, the Democrats are still a huge favorite with Amy Klobuchar in the Minnesota governor's race. But, Lindell would have been a particularly weak nominee.
So let's go to the Northeast now. And I want to flag this race where the Democratic Congressman John Larson of Connecticut lost a bit to keep his seat. Now, he's been in office for, you know, quite some time, I think like 15 terms or something like that. Now, the former mayor of Hartford, Luke Bronin, ran on a message that Larson was just too entrenched in the status quo. Don't think there was politically that big of a difference between them. So what does this result tell you?
It does seem like there's a desire for new blood on the Democratic side. And I think a lot of that is probably based on seeing what happened with Joe Biden and how that kind of, you know, messed up Democrats in the, you know, 2024 campaign cycle. And so we've also seen just a lot of House incumbents in general losing. The number is up to 10 or 11, basically, depending on how you count. Total on both sides, which historically is quite a lot. And redistricting has a little bit to do with that, but there are lots of other bigger things going on, including, I think, some desire for generational change on the Democratic side, which is what John Larson losing, I think, represented.
All right. Lots to talk about. You fit a lot in. So thanks for that. That's Kyle Condic of UVA Center for Politics. Kyle, thanks.
Thank you.
Russia has released a former U.S. Marine after holding him in prison for more than 4 years. President Trump says that Robert Gilman was freed on humanitarian grounds. His supporters say he was near death in a catatonic state and needs medical attention. NPR's Michelle Kellerman has his story.
President Trump announced Gilman's return, saying it came after discussions with Russian President Vladimir Putin. Trump says Russia asked for no one in return. The 32-year-old looked sickly in the photograph posted online. Trump says he talked to Gilman, whose one request was for a cheeseburger. The Massachusetts man will be treated in a medical facility in Texas. He needs a lot of support, says Senator Ed Markey, a Democrat from Massachusetts, who says Gilman was tortured and forcibly medicated in Russia.
It is a tragedy that it took Robert's near-death condition for this case to receive the attention which it required.
The State Department only recently declared that he was being unjustly detained. A Russian businessman close to the Kremlin, Kirill Dmitriev, called it a humanitarian release, but did not comment on the U.S. allegations of mistreatment. According to his supporters, Gilman was transiting through Russia in 2022 on his way to Moldova to teach English, and he fell ill on a train.
When the Russian police come upon him, they think he's drunk, and they claim he assaults them when, in fact, the opposite was true.
That's Kieran Ramsey, a former FBI official, now the chief investigator for Global Reach, a nonprofit organization which advocated for Gilman's release. He says Gilman suffered a lot in Russia.
With ridiculous pressure tactics, like being told the only way you're going to get out of this is if you volunteer to fight for the Russian army against Ukraine. You can imagine the conditions in a Russian gulag these days, especially being an American. He went through a living hell.
The Trump administration says it will continue to work for the release of all Americans unjustly detained in Russia, including Stephen Hubbard, who's in his 70s and was captured in Ukraine. Senator Markey says the U.S. needs to hold Russia to account for its treatment of American detainees.
We cannot reduce the pressure that we apply on the Russians. There are other Americans there.
Global Reach is working on 5 other cases in Russia. Michelle Kellerman, NPR News, the State Department.
This is NPR News.
is 619. Thanks for tuning in to People Powered KEXC, where you're getting a mix of national news like we're hearing from Morning Edition, as well as the local news and the updates from the primary voting in Minnesota that happened yesterday. Our news team was on it. They had a live blog going last night. You can check it out at KEXC.org. Chelsea Perkins will be joining me, our news director, and we'll be getting the updates throughout our morning. Thanks so much for being with us. Tell us, did you vote in the primaries? What do you want to tell us about that experience? You can text 218-326-1234. Support this morning on KEXE comes from the First State Bank of Big Fork. They have branches in Big Fork and Kellyer and offer tools for managing money on any mobile device. Hometown banking at its best since 1912. FSBBigFork.com, member FDIC. And thanks also to the Bagley Area Arts Collaborative offering a workshop in August. Three wire-wrapped pendant workshops August 22nd from 9:30 to 3 at 9 Central Street West in downtown Bagley. Info and registration, bagleyarts.org or on Facebook. Highs today, 77 to 81 with mostly sunny skies and calm northwest winds. Overnight lows, mid-50s to low 60s with some patchy smoke possible. Tomorrow looks mostly sunny, highs in the mid to upper 70s.
R comes from the station. And from Progressive Insurance, offering a variety of insurance options, from auto and home to boat and RV, with online tools for quotes and claims. Coverage options at progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. From Procter & Gamble, maker of Metamucil, made with psyllium, a plant-based fiber that helps support digestive health by trapping and removing waste. Designed to be taken every day. Learn more at Metamucil.com. From the Lemelson Foundation, working to harness the power of invention and innovation to accelerate climate action and improve lives around the world. Learn more at Lemelson.org. And from the listeners who support this NPR station.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin.
I'm Layla Faldin.
And I'm A. Martinez. One of the hottest trends in stand-up comedy is crowd work. That's when the comedian makes the audience part of the act, asking questions and having conversations with members of the crowd. Jeff Arcuri built an entire Netflix comedy special around crowd work. It's called Nice to Meet You.
Like, how old are you guys? How old are you, man? You seem about my age.
42.
Do you feel your age?
I do.
You do? How so? When?
My knees.
Your knees?
Uh-huh.
Oh, no. Let me see them.
I like to consider myself a comedian first or a stand-up comedian first, and then I incorporate crowd work to just kind of add a little flair to my shows. There was a epidemic of it for a while where it was just a lot of people were posting and trying because they were seeing success with it. The way I do it is different than that. I don't just point at an audience member and ask them to work for me. Like, I don't just walk up and say, what's your story to fill time? I kind of use them as a pivot point or a catalyst to talk about what I want to talk about and kind of bring the audience on the same level as me, where we're going to make this funny together. I want them to take half the credit for how the show goes.
I feel like we had this, you're 42, I'm 38. We had the same childhood for the most part, right? You had like a Furby.
I wanted one.
You wanted one.
Aw.
Well, guess what? Look under your seat, buddy.
Dude, that'd be the cutest thing in the world. He's like, oh my God.
How did you get interested in making that part of what you do?
Yeah, at no point was I like, would I even think I'd be somebody who'd want to talk to the crowd? I was just nervous reciting the words I economized into, you know, the sentence. It really started when I started doing cruise ships, and I would do so many shows on the cruise ships, and they would allow me to repeat shows because I can't have like 6 hours worth of material. But the problem is people would come and see me again.
Yeah.
I would basically cut my sets in half and then supplement it with crowd work and just kind of ask the audience about a premise before I'd get into it. And I was finding that there was a lot of fun to be found in premises from the audience's perspective.
Ryan, nice to meet you. Ryan, you guys are married or just together or what?
Engaged.
Oh, amazing. Hell yeah, dude. Hey, how old are you, buddy?
27.
Cool. Were you nervous to propose, man?
No.
No? I don't even think you got on one knee. You're probably like, catch. Was I nervous? No, she knows what she's got.
What are the risky parts of interacting with a crowd of people that you don't know?
Yeah. For a few months when I was on the road, I would start the show by saying, this is kind of how it works. Like, I'm going to engage with you guys. I don't want you randomly yelling out. I was giving this little speech before shows. It just felt very condescending to tell them how to listen to me. So I just figured I just stopped doing that and I started kind of adjusting on the fly. So if somebody was yelling out, I just kind of take them, I separate them from the rest of the crowd. And I say, this is kind of what not to do. That you can kind of see that in my special in the beginning, that first.
Yeah, right at the start. Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to stop the show just for a second. Did you hear what he said earlier about yelling out during the show?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, that made the show worse just now. You feel it.
Sorry.
I know, and you apologized. But I just want you to know, I have jokes to get through. I'm going to get to know you guys. Never you, ever again. But like for the rest of you guys, you could die tomorrow. I wouldn't care. But the rest of you guys.
When somebody is being a jerk or whatever, I like to find an avenue for them to become someone that we clap for. Like I'll have a moment where I'll be like, hey, you know, you're doing so good, but you haven't yelled out in 20 minutes. I'm so proud of you. And then the audience goes, oh, wow, blah, blah, blah. And then now that guy's got attention in a positive light.
I was thinking like if Seinfeld or like Eddie Murphy were coming up just now, would they be doing crowd work?
I don't think so. There's a lot of purity in what they do, and I respect the heck out of it. And I think you don't need to post crowd work to succeed. I just think this is perfect for me, and I just love doing it so much. Yeah. And it was never a forced thing for me.
So speaking of comics that won't do it, here's Anthony Jeselnik. He was on the Dan Le Batard show.
You ask someone what they do for a living, and then you make a joke on that. You know, you ask someone how long they've been in a relationship, and I think that's garbage. So I just don't do it.
I respect that he doesn't want to do it. But at the same time, there are people that do. If we're ever on the same show where everyone's there to see him or me, it may be a little bit of a different audience.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I'm going to talk to you guys, all right?
Now, your wife was a contestant on The Bachelor. Then she was The Bachelorette. You got married 5 days before she started cancer treatment, right? So first off, how is she?
She's doing well. You know, it's a constant give and take. Some weeks it's good news. Some weeks it's not as good news. Mm-hmm. So we're doing great. Yeah.
Okay, good. So now that I know that she's doing well, how soon did you try to find humor in it? Because comedians, I think, try to find humor in things just to kind of cope with them.
Oh, I started pull starting that engine the second we got the news. For those first few weeks, I just needed her to laugh. And I didn't realize this, but that was more for me than it was for her. And the jokes she makes, like, this is maybe not as funny to you guys, but we were on a cruise recently with my parents. And my dad called my wife, called Katie an angel. And she just goes, don't call me that. I ain't dead yet, Steve. And the look on both my parents' faces is like, you can't say that. And I'm like, you can, though. That's like why I love her, is that she's not going to hide from it. And we make fun of it now. We took the power back from cancer and now we make fun of it. And that was huge. But yeah. For a while I was trying too hard and I realized I need to not do that, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I really think that the special being called Nice to Meet You is perfect because it truly feels like when you are dealing with people in these situations that you really, really are happy to meet them. I mean, do you think you'll always be that way comedy-wise?
I truly hope so. I love doing what I do. I love performing for people. I love changing people's evenings. I love the messages I get from people saying like, you know, you got me through things or your comedy or like, we look forward to this every year coming to see you. Like those things will never go away from me. I don't see it could ever. I've been doing this 15 years and I've lived in basements. I've slept next to rats and I was happy to do it because I got comedy at the end of the day, you know?
Jeff Arcuri's Netflix comedy special is called Nice to Meet You. Jeff, nice to meet you, Jeff.
Yeah, thank you. It was great talking to you.
This is NPR News.
Israeli settlers are attacking Palestinians in the occupied West Bank at a record pace, according to the UN. But for thousands of Palestinians, their only income source is working for Israelis.
There is no minimum wage, no social insurance, medical insurance, and other social benefits.
That story on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Mm-hmm.
can hear All Things Considered coming up this afternoon at 4 o'clock here on People Powered KAXC. Good morning to you. It is 6:29. Coming up, we'll have National Native News. They are reporting today the Arctic Winter Games International Committee has chosen Fairbanks, Alaska to host the Games in 2028. We'll hear from organizers. Last night was the primary election in the state of Minnesota. Our news team was working round the clock. You want to catch up on all of the results at KAXC.org and by staying tuned this morning. Chelsea Perkins will be joining me. We'll walk through some of the primary elections throughout the state of Minnesota, or northern Minnesota specifically, but also some of the statewide and federal races as well. Check it out at KAXC.org. Peggy Flanagan won the Democratic Senate primary in Minnesota, and Michelle Tafoya won the Republican primary for the Senate seat from Minnesota. We'll tell you more about it. All that's coming up. But first, areas of fog early today, highs 79 to 84 degrees. Partly sunny with calm northwest winds, a slight chance for showers and thunderstorms. Tonight, mostly cloudy, lows in the mid to upper 50s, and a chance of showers and thunderstorms. And then on Thursday, cloudy, then gradually becoming mostly sunny with highs in the mid 70s to 80s.
This is National Native News. I'm Jill Freitas. The Arctic Winter Games International Committee has chosen Fairbanks to host the Games in 2028. That's according to a press release issued last week, which says organizers chose to buck an April decision that would move to a three-year cycle temporarily. The announcement means the next Arctic Winter Games, which had been set for 2029, will happen a year earlier than was planned. A statement from the committee's president says an extraordinary proposal from Fairbanks this spring made it possible to return the traditional two-year cycle. The press release says the Fairbanks North Star Borough, School District, State of Alaska, and other partners demonstrated the community's readiness to host the Games. The international competition brings together about 2,000 youth participants from across the circumpolar north, including Alaska, Canada, and Nordic countries. The multi-sport event and the Indigenous cultural celebration started in 1970 and features sports like hockey, skiing, curling, as well as Diné games such as the finger pole and snow snake. The competition took place in Whitehorse last winter. It was last hosted in Alaska in the Matanuska-Susitna Borough in 2024. The Games have come to Fairbanks three times, twice in the 80s and another time in 2014. The Northwest Territories had been slated to host the 2028 iteration of the event, but withdrew its bid in 2024. Its municipal and community affairs minister cited reasons like insufficient capacity and facilities, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation reported at the time. This story was provided by KUAC's Patrick Gilchrist. Over the weekend, a tribe in southern Arizona warned that border wall contractors may soon encroach upon their lands. As KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrasio reports, the tribe says it's ready to deal with trespassers.
According to the Fana'afam Code, the tribe may impose up to a $5,000 fine for civil trespassing. Tribal police would escort any offender off the reservation, sharing a 62-mile boundary with Mexico. The U.S. Department of Homeland Security is looking to erect a border wall there. The Fana'afam Nation has sued, claiming its sovereignty would be violated should the Trump administration be allowed to proceed. While Customs and Border Protection is aware of the tribe's warning, the federal agency declined to comment due to ongoing litigation. For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Pietrasio.
Native tribes and conservation groups are preparing to sue the Trump administration after the president signed orders to sharply reduce the size of two national monuments in Utah. Mark Richardson has details.
Republicans are celebrating the move, while tribes and environmentalists say it strips protections from culturally significant public lands. Governor Spencer Cox and Utah's congressional delegation joined the president to celebrate the signing of the orders. Steve Block, legal director for the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance, calls conservatives' vision for the state's wildlands wrong-headed.
Mike Lee's vision of the American West is not one with sweeping federal public lands. His view is Utah should be the South Carolina of the West with almost no public land.
Trump reduced the area of the Bears Ears and Grand Staircase Escalante National Monuments by about 3 million acres from their current boundaries, roughly 90% of the original protected area. I'm Mark Richardson.
And I'm Jill Freitas.
National Native News is produced by Kwanek Broadcast Corporation with funding in part by the Annenberg Foundation and the Ford Foundation. Good morning, I'm Heidi Holton. Thanks for being with me on this Wednesday, August 12th, sitting in for Andrew DeZingle. We are going to be getting updates throughout our morning on the primary elections yesterday. One thing we'd like is to hear from you. Did you get out to vote? Why'd you vote? Any other comments to make about it? We've got some collected some of the stories that our news team heard as they were out at the polls across northern Minnesota. We'll hear from some people, some of the unsung heroes, of course, like the election judges, as well as some of the reasons why people ended up voting in the primaries yesterday. Lots of updates available right now at KAXC.org. Republican State House Speaker Lisa Demuth and DFL Senator Amy Klobuchar are set to advance to the general election for governor of Minnesota. It's reported by our reporter Emma Crabb. As of 1 a.m. last night, Demuth cinched 43.43% of the Republican vote. Second place in the primary fell to Mike Lindell, a President Donald Trump-backed candidate who claimed 32.45% of the vote. The DFL side of the race told a more decisive story, with Klobuchar and her running mate Ben Scheer winning 89.64% of the vote. We'll be telling you a lot more as we continue on this morning. And one of the things we like to hear about is kind of how this whole thing happens, how elections happen, how the state of Minnesota handles things. We'll be doing a lot more of that before the general election in November. But first, our news team was out there in the field. They were talking to folks, and especially they were talking to the people that put in their time to make sure elections are run fairly.
When I was young, I went to work for a small government. And that was when I realized grassroots is what really matters. I might not have a voice in a bigger arena, but here in our township, this is where it all starts. And I just love the process. I think that our elections are a beautiful thing. It's important. It's the foundation of our entire democracy, nation, what we wish to be, right? So I tell people, if you don't participate, it doesn't work. Well, a lot of people maybe early voted. That's just a fabulous option, especially for our elder people that live up here. When we get closer to the November election, you don't know what the weather's gonna be. Some of us don't know. We might be at the doctor, right? We might be here, we might be there. You might be a snowbird and this is where you vote. So the availability of vote by mail, absentee ballots, early voting, I think brings out a lot more people than if we just limited it to this one day. And if we're going to limit to one day, let's make it a national holiday and make it compulsory.
Well, my family was very, very involved with, you know, social responsibilities, and so they taught us at a very young age to get involved and to, you know, basically to pitch in and do our bit. You know, I've always been one, I get real frustrated when I hear kind of the election, everyone's talking about how screwed up it is, and I wish people had a better understanding of just how many checks and balances and things that we count before we even start, and the things we, you know, we know how many ballots are, we know how many of this and that. And then this evening, when we're all done, you know, we'll be spending a good hour just basically doing the self-audit of, is everything working out right? Do we have the right number of ballots, the right, all the counts done? And then it goes to the county, and it basically gets all checked all over again. I mean, you know, our election numbers are accurate, and they're secure.
You're going to be 92 on Sunday.
Don't say that.
Don't
I was just telling her how old.
How old are you?
I'm 27, so this is my third election.
He's doing a super job, too.
I try to do the best job that I can. I try to do it as good as I can.
Gwen was saying she's imparted a lot of wisdom onto you.
She has. She
What's
has.
The biggest lesson you've learned from her?
Stay standing, even when you want to sit down. I think that's good for life, though, too, you know? Just to keep going and keep on, even when you get tired.
But I love working with him.
It's fun.
Well, I think our elections are run like kind of how we run our small towns. You know, it's very personal. We want everybody to feel welcome when they come in to vote and, you know, just know that your vote matters.
From the news team of KEXE, they were out there at the polling places yesterday talking to election workers and voters. We'll hear more from them throughout the morning and more results. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Heidi Holton. It is 6:40. I want to tell you about some of the results that we've heard from so far. Itasca County Board, District 1, that is Cohasset, Deer River, and S Lake area. Lonnie Witowski got the highest vote, 839, and Corey Smith, the incumbent, 715. Those two will go to the general election. And in Crow Wing County Board District 4, some of the city of Baxter plus the first assessment district, winner was the incumbent, Rosemary Franzen, and also who will face her in the generals will be Don Espy. Find more information at KAXE.org. We've got an update on the Chisholm Mayor primary that had no incumbent. Travis Vake and Joy Frazier will move on to ballots in November after earning the most votes in the primary. Candidates were 7 votes apart, according to unofficial results. Coming up, we've got more from National Public Radio. We are getting an update on President Trump's threatened 50% tariffs to go through later this month. That means construction businesses that rely on materials imported from Canada are among those that will suffer. Stay tuned for that story. We'd like to thank the business supporters of KEXE, and that includes the Grand Rapids Farmers Market, celebrating 40 years of connecting local farmers and community. The Power of Produce or Pop Club returns for the season. Kids age 2 to 12 can sign up for a passport at the market. Each visit earns them a card to spend on fresh fruit, vegetable, or plants. Market open Wednesday and Saturdays, 8 to 1 at the intersection of Golf Course and Pacagama Avenue. grfarmersmarket.org. We'd also like to thank Woodworks Homes, dedicated to the art of building in northern Minnesota by constructing handcrafted new homes and offering remodeling services. More at woodworksmn.com. Let's take a look at the temperatures around the region. 59 right now and sunny in Bagley, 61 fair skies in Grand Rapids, Hibbing 56, Bemidji reporting 58, some rain in Aiken at 61 degrees. For the rest of our day, we're looking at temperatures 79 to 84 with partly sunny skies and calm northwest winds. We have a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms moving in this afternoon and into the evening. Lows tonight in the mid to upper 50s.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Leila Fadel.
And I'm Michelle Martin. Good morning. President Trump's new tariffs on Canadian products are scheduled to take effect next week. Trump announced last month he wanted a 50% tax on many Canadian imports, from clothing to building materials like plywood and cement. The countries could come to an agreement before then to avoid them. But as Richard Haller from North Country Public Radio reports, the uncertainty is already causing stress for business owners and customers.
The scent of sawdust, diesel fumes, and cedar sap hangs in the air at a lumber yard in Rensselaer Falls, New York, just 15 miles south of the Canadian border. This business, JP Building Supply, stores and sells all types of building materials, including sheathing like plywood. It buys around a third of its lumber from Canada. James Putman, the owner, says that if these tariffs really do move forward, they are in trouble.
I mean, that's going to affect us tremendously. If things bump up 50%, that means we have to add on 50%. because we've got to obviously, we got to put it on to the customer, and that's just going to push everything else up.
For the past year and a half, the Trump administration has aggressively tariffed Canada. But after the Supreme Court ruled that Trump didn't have the authority to impose certain tariffs by executive order, the government had to refund around $100 billion. Now it's imposing new tariffs under a different provision that had never been used before. Across the border in Canada, Hank Vetter is a sales manager at a lumber business in Ottawa that ships 60% of its product to the U.S. He says the threat of these tariffs alone is already having an impact on his U.S. customers like home builders and contractors.
They say, hey, if that 50% is coming in, I need to do one of two things. I'm going to either order today before the tariffs kick in, or then I'm going to wait until there's relief in those tariffs.
Vetter says these tariffs are causing a domino effect, raising import costs on specific items, which then pushes companies to raise all of their prices.
So then that affects the contractor because he's trying to get this house built on time for his customer. And then that affects the supply chain because if the contractor is not ordering the material, then the supply chain is weakened.
In central New York, A.J. Warmoth owns a dairy farm and also chairs the Northeast Dairy Producers Association. He hopes the U.S. and Canada reach a better trade deal. But existing tariffs, like on steel and aluminum, stacked with the uncertainty, have already created economic pressure.
So a lot of people are building barns, a lot of people are, you know, investing in their operations, and it just raises the cost on everything. Cement, steel, anything you're doing in using in a building project or anything, it's those costs have escalated exponentially.
These new tariffs cover a slew of items coming out of Canada. Everything from chandeliers to ice skates to dairy and alcohol. Amy Magnus is a customs broker based in Vermont and helps businesses calculate tariffs when shipping across the border. She says she's never seen anything like this before in her 40 years of experience.
I am telling my customers, please check the list and see if you have any products that appear on those lists. If you do have, let's say, all these shipments of ice skates that you want to bring into the United States, bring them in right now.
Magnus says she hopes both countries work out a resolution. She's worried these new tariffs will create a colder relationship between Canada and the U.S. For NPR News, I'm Richard Haller.
This is NPR News.
It's Morning Edition from National Public Radio here on KAXE. We're celebrating 50 years of people-powered radio, thanks to people like you who are keeping us going. We just finished up our summer membership drive. If you didn't get a chance to donate, we need folks to support the work that KAXE does, whether that is the soundtrack for your morning, for your evening, for your trivia needs on Saturday nights, or the local news. That's what we're focusing on today, the day after the primaries, some of the updates, including some of the stories that came from the polls. Our news team was out there across northern Minnesota and talked to folks who were voting. We'd love to hear from you this morning as well. What brought you to the primaries? You can text 218-326-1234, or what didn't bring you to the primaries? Lots of things going on. County fair time, where lots of politicians will be. Beltrami County Fair starts today in Bemidji, and that goes through the 16th of August. The Carlton County Fair begins tomorrow in Barnum, and the Central Lakes Central St. Louis County Fair begins on Friday and goes through the weekend in Meadowlands. Meet several local authors today at the Bemidji Public Library. That starts at 5 p.m. You can learn about their writing journeys, explore a variety of books, and connect with fellow book lovers. And the Brainerd Ski Loons have their final show of the season. That's at 6:30 at Lum Park. Bring your own blanket or chair. Lots going on throughout our region. We're going to hear from some folks now that our news team talked to yesterday, reasons that they went out to the polls.
Ensure the right candidates that, you know, that we feel are the right candidates can come through for the primaries at least. We had our personal preference for the sheriff's race local-wise, and then we feel like we, you know, for the other ones, we wanted to make sure that the ones we that they make it to the to the final. I think what's been going on in the state, we're not really satisfied with what's been happening. So we want some of that stuff to get taken care of.
Because we need to change the American way, and we need better candidates to do a better job than what's being done right now. Limiting the taxes so that we're not, you know, they're not constantly taxing us. The most important is taking care of the economy.
Well, we wanted to vote for the right people, and we did, I think. I did.
Same.
Just to get out and vote the right way.
Please vote, everybody.
Yeah, it's a civic duty. It's got to be, you know, when I was younger, I didn't vote as often, and with things going on the way they are, I feel like it's important to vote.
A lot of them, actually.
Affordability, cost of living, you know.
Yeah.
All that stuff.
I mean, I teach in a school, so I mean, everything that has to do with school issues, I mean, it's always playing in the back of my mind as far as those concerns go.
You know, fraud is a big one, too.
Yes.
Yeah. I feel like more needs to be done with that. Mm-hmm.
That were out at the primaries yesterday across northern Minnesota. You can get updates from our news team at KEXE.org, and you'll get it as you listen this morning on the Wednesday morning show. Chelsea Perkins will be joining us, and we'll be talking about some of the outcomes, but you can find lots of information on local primaries, on statewide, on the federal races right now at KEXE.org.
Letting myself a coming county welfare line. I was feeling strung out, hung out on the line. Saw myself a going down to war in June. What I want, all I want is writing myself a tune. Wrote a song. Arrested, wound me up in jail. Richmond about to blow up. Communication failed. If you see the answer, now's the time to say what I want. All I want is get you down to pray. Talk to you. Chains. Somebody said it's different now. Look, it's just the same. Pharaoh spins the message round and round the truth. They could have saved a million people. How can I tell you? Talk to you. to you.
From her album produced by Jeff Tweedy, that's Mavis Staples. It's called Wrote a Song for Everyone. It is 6:55. I'm Heidi Holton. Thanks for tuning in to the Wednesday morning show. I'm sitting in for Andrew DeZingle on this day after the primaries. Our news director, Chelsea Perkins, will be joining us, and we'll get updates of the primaries across our region. Until then, some of the winners, Bemidji City Council at large that serves the whole city of Bemidji. There were three in the race. The top two vote getters were Ron Johnson, who has served more than 20 years as the Ward 3 counselor, and Audrey M. Thayer. Also, Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan defeated Representative Angie Craig and other candidates in the primary race to become the DFL's candidate for senator. Anticipated to be a close race, Progressive Flanagan beat centrist Craig by nearly 10 points. Flanagan will now face Republican primary winner Michelle Tafoya in the general election on November 3rd. And in the primary for Cass County Board District 4, that includes Walker, Longville, and Reamer. Top vote getters were Tyler Seifert, and the incumbent was second with Scott D. Bruins. They will head to the general election. Find more information at kaxe.org. We'll have the Up North report coming up, the news from our region, and lots more throughout our morning show at 9 o'clock. It is Headwaters with your host, Kari Headland. We receive support from the Lake Country Journal, their magazine showcasing the beauty, landscape, and people of Lake Country. The February-March issue publishes the winners of their annual photo contest, which are also displayed at the Brainerd Lakes Regional Airport. Submissions accepted all year round at lakecountryjournal.com. Programming is also supported in part by Grand Dental Center, where Drs. Lisa Johnson, Leanna McBride, and their staff provide full-service family dental care for patients of all ages in Grand Rapids and surrounding communities. More information at granddentalcenter.com.
Released in November of 1976, Hajira is Joni Mitchell's eighth album and a fine example of her restless and fiercely independent spirit. She once described herself as a singing playwright, and Hajira makes a serious case for that description. Each song is a complete story drawn from her own life. In this album, we hear Mitchell digging even deeper into her jazz explorations, moving away from rock musician session players and instead working with musicians like Jaco Pastorius, who helped her channel the sounds she was craving. Hajira is a whole unit, a collection of songs that wander and sometimes meander, very much channeling the road trip journey that inspired them. This album proves Mitchell isn't simply a songwriter. She constantly redefined what a song could sound like, what a woman could say, and where a musician could go when she refused to stay put.
All year long, we're celebrating the music of 1976. That was the year that KAXE went on the air. Thanks to Kari Headland for that on Joni Mitchell. That's who we've been celebrating this week. Live music around northern Minnesota for tonight, known only locally, will be playing at Mississippi Music at the Bemidji Waterfront. That is at 6 p.m. Tomorrow, Trent Bergeron will be at Gregory Park in Brainerd at 6 for Concerts in the Park series. And Willie Martin and the Rangers will be at Carl Schuster Park in Bowabic at 6:30. Friday begins the Bayfront Blues Festival in Duluth with Little Ed and the Blues Imperials, Eric Johansson, and more. And in Aiken Friday night, Kenny Fiedler Band is at the Terrace at 7 p.m. The Northern Minnesota Robotics Conference has a grand opening and ribbon cutting for the new North Star Center, and that is today at 2 p.m. This new science, technology, automation, and robotics center is located within the Beltrami County Fairgrounds in Bemidji. There is a support group for families impacted by substance use Wednesdays at 5:30 at Essentia Health in Virginia. You can find a space that's authentic, safe, and supportive. Meetings are in the boardroom. You can enter through the urgent care door. That's in Virginia. And you can learn how to make a junk journal. It's at the Bemidji Senior Center tomorrow at 10 a.m. All the materials will be provided, and this free class is open to all.
Weather around the region, we're seeing some areas of fog early this morning with highs in the upper 70s to mid 80s. Partly sunny with calm northwest winds, a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms. Leading into mostly cloudy skies for tonight, we might not be seeing the Perseid meteor tonight if we